Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Buckeye Weekly Podcast. I am Tony Gerdeman, here as always with Tom. Or Tom, how's it going?
Tony, I am glad we didn't have to cover the Kentucky-Georgia game in person, because that did not look like the most entertaining or interesting football game I've watched all year.
Indeed, Tom. And also, I'm sure you're glad that you didn't have to take photos in that game, because I was told some of the reason for Georgia's not outstanding performance, they won the game 16-6. Some of the reason for the lack of outstandingness was due to the weather. And if you look at the box score, temperature was like 36 degrees, and it was also very windy, winds of around 13 miles per hour. So when you're playing in conditions like that, you cannot expect to be at your best. So 36 degrees, 13 mile per hour winds, that tells you, that gives you an explanation as to why maybe Stetson Bennett wasn't his outstanding normal self, and also makes you wonder whatever happens if Georgia ever has to go on the road in, say, a December playoff game up north.
Yeah, you look at they kept talking about the wind, and, you know, they're showing this stuff that, you know, flags on the field and whatever, the flags on the top of the goalposts, and everything was blowing in a different direction, which is kind of weird. They talked about that on the broadcast, but also, it was, you know, that was, what, 2 weeks after we were at Northwestern and getting, like, blown across the field. That was, yeah, it was very much not the same thing. The other thing that I forgot was, that was the weekend with just the completely insane scores. Like, you're looking at the ticker and you're like, oh, yeah, that was the weekend everyone played terribly. That's right. Okay, good. So, yeah, it was... You know, this was a game where it never really felt like Georgia was in any real danger, but also Georgia never really pulled away and had a comfortable lead at any point either. So it was just kind of a weird game, a little, you know, maybe a little bit like the Ohio State Northwestern game or something like that, but in much less insane weather conditions.
Yeah. And so, as you guys know, when we do these watches or rewatches, we'll go back and forth with five or so things that we alone have discovered about one of these teams and stuff that caught our eye, and I've got a page full of notes, Tom, but I will let you go first as to something you learned from watching Georgia's 16-6 win at Kentucky.
Well, I think the number one thing is I feel like we're starting to pick up some patterns here, and boy, you just going east-west on runs is just absolute death against Georgia. And, you know, Kentucky didn't do particularly well north-south either, but when they hit something in the run game and hit something was like either a quarterback draw by Will Levis, which I'm not sure how applicable that is to the Ohio State offense, but, you know, every once in a while you'd see Rodriguez hit an 8-yarder or something like that. It was just stick your foot in the field and cut upfield and go, and don't dance and don't do, you know, don't run like slow developing plays to the sideline. Just get upfield, get what you can to stay on schedule and move on. And, you know, there were, Georgia had several times where they stuffed Kentucky on, you know, there was just, they stuffed him on an early 4th-and-1. They stuffed him on some other short yardage kind of plays. Nothing about this Georgia defense makes me look at it and think Ohio State's going to have a lot of success running the ball against this team. But if they are going to have any success, it's going to be, you'd better go north-south or something very, very quick, you know, pop pass kind of thing, jet sweep kind of motion, going sideline to sideline, you know, quickly, and don't, you know, a reverse is not going to work against this team. So don't waste your time trying it.
Kentucky threw some of those wide screens that Ohio State fans have come to know and hate, and they did not do all that well. You know, running back Juton McClain had 5 catches for a yard with a long of 6 yards to give you an idea. And they wrapped him up pretty well when they tried to get outside. And I would agree with you, Tom. Now, they did have some success with Barry and Brown, but he was also the big guy downfield as well, receiver. And we can get into that. But yeah, the east-west, again, I know it's part of your offense, and so you have to do what you do. But just know that it's going to lead to like 2nd-and-10, 2nd-and-12, 2nd-and-8, something like that. And if you're okay with that, you know, as Ryan Day will say, well, we do that so that by the fourth quarter, the defense is tired of running east to west, and those will start to hit. Sure, if you want to do the rope-a-dope thing like that and waste some things, go for it. I felt like Georgia in this one didn't necessarily respect the passing game as much as they did against Tennessee, and why would you? You know, obviously, Will Levis, a much, 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 much better quarterback than Hendon Hooker. We all know that. We all understand that.
Thanks, Todd McShay.
Yes. So, of course, no reason to be worried about the Kentucky passing game. But I thought Georgia was a little bit more aggressive, and they weren't just like sitting back like they did against Tennessee. I expect them to sit back more against Ohio State than they did against Kentucky. But even against Kentucky and Tennessee, we did see receivers get behind the Georgia defense. That's the kind of the first thing I will talk about. And it happened down the stretch when Georgia should have been protecting against it. When Kentucky needed to move the ball downfield, they were taking shots. And these weren't necessarily crisp and clean passes and completions. There was some of these were, I don't want to call them arm punts, punt-ish on the part of Will Levis. And maybe the Georgia defenders got a little bit lost. There was, you know, there were a couple nice passes dropped in there, but it gave you the idea that if CJ Stroud is accurate, Ohio State is going to be able to connect on some of these. And that will, I guess, supplement the perhaps inability to run the ball.
Well, if you look at C.J. Stroud compared to Will Levis, I think arm strength is going to be at least comparable. Accuracy is probably in C.J. Stroud's column. And in terms of the wide receivers they're throwing to, you know, no disrespect to Barry and Brown, who had a fantastic game in this game, but I'm going to go ahead and take Emeka Ebuka and Marvin Harrison and Julian Fleming ahead of Barry and Brown. And they hit Brown on, he was one-on-one with Keely Ringo down the sideline on the opening possession, converted a 3rd-and-12 on that. And then the two plays you were talking about later in the game, those were both first down play action where you're in a situation where the defense is thinking run and you hit them with play action. And both of those were against Christopher Brown, or Christopher Smith, the safety. And both of them were Brown downfield. And both of them, I mean, if you don't want to say arm punts, I will say I wonder if his arm is Australian and leave it at that. But he kind of heaved him downfield. And it was, you know, it was the kind of play on at least one of them that was very much like what Ohio State fans have been cursing at their cornerbacks for all year, where it's just kind of a 50-50 ball and the receiver gets in better position and brings it down. And it's not a fantastic pass that hit him in stride, but guess what? Those yards count the same. So that's going to be something that I think Ohio State is going to have to get a little bit out of their comfort zone, to your point on the side to side and, you know, going sideline to sideline. And well, we got to do it because it'll pay off in the fourth quarter. And the way it pays off is by you being down 10 points in the fourth quarter because you're not scoring points because Georgia's tackling you. Georgia's defense is, you said it perfectly the last time, they trigger so fast, but they're also such sure tacklers that guess what? If you have crappy blocking out on the edge, which is something we've seen a lot from Ohio State this year, that's not going to work. Like, I am deeply sorry, but that is not going to work. Ohio State's going to have to take some more shots downfield than they have. And you have to just accept the fact that, yeah, sometimes you're going to be throwing into coverage. Yes, you are not going to complete all of them. Some of them might even be intercepted. But going sideline to sideline is not going to work in this game. And so Ohio State needs to make their peace with that and game plan accordingly.
Some of the one of the deep shots was down the sideline. Keely Ringo, Georgia cornerback, looks back. And it looks like he should have seen the ball. And then he just looks back to the receiver, doesn't put his hands up or anything, and it's completed. It was very odd. It goes further to my point that Ohio State fans would not like Keely Ringo because he's very up and down. Also had an interception in this game that he intercepted in the end zone, returned to 45 yards, got beat on the play, but it was a bad throw in between the safety and the corner, and was able to make the interception and then return it. But just that first one, it was very odd. He looked back and, again, should have seen the ball and then just, well, I'm going to continue running after the defensive back and then push him out of bounds or whatever. And so I thought, we had heard that Keely Ringo has been getting targeted more and more, and you know, they went after him a little bit in this one.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, he wasn't picked on consistently through the game. And, you know, they went after Christopher Smith more. And I don't know if that was even going after Christopher Smith as much as just like he was the deep guy and they were going to throw the ball downfield no matter what. But yeah, he's not someone you need to stay away from, but he's also someone who can make a nice play on the ball. We've seen him two games in a row that we've watched intercept a pass deep down the right sideline, you know, in or near the end zone and, you know, kill off what was looking like a promising drive. So I think Ohio State's just going to have to make their peace with the fact that you are going to potentially risk losing a drive on a play like that, because if you don't, you're not going to be aggressive enough in all the other ways. My next one, boy, we've watched a bunch of games, and Georgia's run game has been somewhere between like and non-existent. And this was the one. This is by far the most impressed I've been with Georgia's running backs in terms of actually running the ball. Kenny McIntosh against Oregon had, I don't know, 20 or 30 yards rushing, but had 100 and something yards receiving. So he's been an impact player. We haven't really seen him in our first three games that we've watched be an impact player on the ground. He was an impact player on the ground. And, you know, Kentucky's defensive line was wildly unimpressive in this game. We have seen Georgia's offensive line get pushed around a little bit by Mizzou. Kentucky was not pushing anyone around in any way. Kentucky was just getting whomped up front. And, you know, Kenny McIntosh was, and also, really all three of their backs, hitting the hole hard, dragging guys. You know, you saw the pile kind of moving in the same way, you know, when you watch Blake Corum this year, there's just a huddle, you know, just a herd of guys, and the herd just kind of keeps slowly moving downfield. That was Kenny McIntosh a bunch in this game. And that was if Georgia can do that against Ohio State, I don't think they can. I think Ohio State's defensive front is substantially better than Kentucky's, so they're probably not going to be able to do that. But if they can do that, that would be very bad for Ohio State because that's going to open up a bunch of other stuff downfield. But yeah, that to me, this is the first time I've looked at Georgia's running game and gone, oh, this is a really impressive performance on the ground.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I will agree with you regarding the Kenny McIntosh thing, because he was very good in this one. And again, I think he's a very underrated player, and maybe none of his numbers jump out, but that's because they use him in a number of different ways. One of the things that I have down here, though, is you have some of the same short yardage issues that Ohio State fans have seen with the Buckeyes. Mm-hmm. And you've got good numbers overall. Georgia rushes for 247 yards. However, there was a goal line stand where they did not get into the end zone. There were two separate in the third quarter, like third and two situations that they did not pick up on the ground, and so they punted. So you have this three times in this game, Georgia's defensive line, maybe the only three times, Georgia's defensive line like stepped up and kept Georgia from moving the chains or scoring. And you go back to the Missouri game. What was the difference there for Missouri, and what kept them so close? It was the defensive line creating havoc and making some plays. And I thought in spurts, the Kentucky Wildcat defensive line did that in this game, and makes me think that Ohio State can as well. The way they were able to just, you know, get some penetration. I was also not very impressed with Darnell Washington, tight end, his blocking in some of these short yardage situations. Kentucky was just getting in there and getting, it was just maybe one guy winning and then getting into the backfield and doing his job. So I was impressed with that. But overall, yeah, the running game, it reminded me so much of Ohio State, where it's like you look at where you fell short and it's like, yes, but also 250 yards rushing. Like, that is the goal. They average 5.5 yards per carry. Like, what more do you want? And it's, well, you always want more. You want the short yardage ones that you didn't get. Cause I'm going to assume that's what, the coaching staff walks out of this game with. Like, yeah, we got the win, but we need to fix this. And so that's something overall that I think Ohio State fans can look at and see. Defensive lines can really obviously have an impact in limiting Georgia. I don't know how well you're going to stop them, but I guess 16 points. One of the interesting things, and it doesn't need to be one of mine, but the low number of possessions in this game. Mm-hmm. Each team had three possessions in the first half, because Kentucky's first two possessions went 15 minutes.
Yeah, that was a really, really, really slow tempo game. And Georgia's not exactly a high tempo team normally either. But yeah, I actually pulled up the drive chart when I was close to half. I'm like, am I forgetting a drive that I just watched? No, I'm not. They literally just had three possessions, and then Georgia got the ball to start the second half, and it was like, really? Did Kentucky have the first possession of the game? But yes, they did, because there was that weird kickoff to open the game. So yeah, it was a very slow paced, deliberate game. But I mean, to your point on the short yardage, you're absolutely right. That was the third down and goal, the fourth and goal from the one, both just kind of like, well, we're just going to out man ball you and ram it up the middle. And then there was a fourth and one later where they were going to just have Stetson Bennett sneak it, and that didn't work. And, you know, I don't know how much of that's really applicable to the Ohio State game, because it feels like you might get a little more creative and you run a Stetson Bennett bootleg or something like that on one of those situations where, you know, everyone is crammed in and expecting the thing, the thing that you're about to do. And if you just run a little naked bootleg or run a little waggle out of that or something like that, it's a walk-in touchdown. So we'll see. But yes, that was definitely sort of the exception to the rule there. Kenny McIntosh averaged 7.5 yards per carry, 19 carries, 143 yards. Only a long of 26. It wasn't like they were ripping off long runs. It was just consistently 8, 9, 10 yards. He was averaging 10 yards a carry, I think, in the second half at one point. Kendall Milton, 6 carries for 31, and Daywon Edwards, 14 for 50. you know, nothing big, averaging 3.6 yards per carry, and nothing flashy, but you know, it was enough on this day because Tennessee had 124 yards through three quarters. Or sorry, Kentucky had 124 yards through three quarters. So, not exactly a day when Georgia's defense was threatened all that much. One thing that I thought was interesting in a game where, you know, Stetson Bennett is like 3 years away from his AARP card, so he should know game situations and all that kind of stuff. There was a play, I'm now struggling to find this in my volumes of notes, but there was a play where it was, they were up, I think, they were up 16-0 late in the third quarter. And there was, I think, it might have been a first down. It was a third down. Sorry. They were up 16-0 late in the third quarter. And it's a third down, and it's like, you're up two scores. They've done nothing against your defense all day, and he almost throws a pick six. Like he got it there. But it was like he missed the cornerback missed it by an inch, like literally an inch. Like he might have even tipped the ball, and it was like, boy, that was not a good decision to throw that ball. And then he threw an awful interception in the first half too, where just heaved into double coverage. I think that was a first down, and it's like that. You know, you're up 6-0 at that point, something like that. And again, Kentucky has really not shown much of anything. And there's no reason to force that ball in there. And that was a one where he just was frustrated because they had bogged down a couple times and was just, you know, the old Kyle Orton, screw it, I'm going deep. Like that was very much like, I have decided in my head before I've even taken the snap where this ball is going. And well, I hope there aren't too many defenders there, but if there are, well, we'll just see how it goes. Those were a couple plays where, you know, you're going to have to be better than that against Ohio State. And with the Missouri game and with the Kentucky game, those are both games against teams that are pretty low in the division standings. They're both road games. Neither of them were, you know, crazy atmospheres where it's, oh boy, it's going to be, you're really going to get hyped up to play this game. It was just kind of like, well, you know, it's like Ohio State going to Maryland. Like, well, okay, we have to check this box, so we're going to check this box. But, you know, I assume you're going to see a more focused, more locked-in Georgia team than you did in these two games that we've watched that have been the how-are-they-this-bad kind of games. But, man, Stetson Bennett has to make better decisions than he did in this one.
Yeah, the interception was like a deep, skinny post type of thing where there's just a four-man rush. And then he eventually just, you know what, I'm just going to throw it. It was a YOLO thing. Like, we can afford an interception type of thing here where, as you said, it's a lesser opponent, so you feel like you can take more risks. And although against Ohio State, you probably feel like you can take risks because those generally pan out for teams that have tried it. So there'll be some of that. But yeah, I wrote that down, that the near pick six, which came via a blitz, and he just kind of flat foot late, kind of throw that as you're watching, you're like, oh wow, how is this going to end up? And it was completed and it picks up 35 yards and it looks great in the box score. But man, that was a scary one where it looked like everybody watching, it was like, oh, and then of course it gets completed. And, you know, we've seen this year where CJ Stroud has thrown something that kind of looks like an interception, but it ends up, and the only place the receiver can get it, and you're like, oh, that's just precision. This one, it sure didn't feel like precision, but it worked out for Georgia. But yeah, I'm with you. It was not his best game. Clearly, he threw for what? He was 13 of 19, 116 yards. I think this is the first time we watched them where they were really run heavy mm-hmm. compared to the pass, and 46 rushes, 19 passes to give you an idea. But again, the conditions, I can't stress this enough. High 30s temperature, low teens wind, to try and operate in that kind of environment, it's hard to do. And so give Georgia credit for doing what they could do. I guess I'll mention this, and I don't even know if it's real, but I think it is actually real. More false starts for another Georgia opponent. Like, the Georgia defensive line is concerning. this wasn't a matter of, oh, the crowd got to the offensive line. This is just a matter of Georgia getting to the offensive line. And I wonder if there's a stat that time that we can find out Georgia leads the nation in opponent false starts. I bet they're pretty high up there because I don't know, maybe three in this game, but just inopportune times. And again, you can't lose 5 yards against Georgia's defense. You can't expect to gain 15 yards in three plays against Georgia consistently. And especially if a false start comes like on a third down, now you're almost completely screwed. And so you've got to be locked in. And also you saw Georgia's defensive line a few times shift before the snap. And then one time that may have caused a false start. Another time it caused a holding. So the concern about the Georgia defensive line, obviously very, very real. And you should be concerned. But man, you got to hold your water sometime.
Yeah, and I mean, third down is not a good time to false start, but they had one of the worst false starts they had was right after Will Levis converted a 3rd and 7 on a quarterback draw, and then they brought in the backup for a play because Levis's foot got hurt, and the backup comes in, and the timing's all messed up, and they false start then, and that was a point where they were in the red zone, I think, and I mean, maybe down to like the 15, something like that. Like, this is your best chance to score in the first half, or one of, you know, probably your best chance to score in the first half. And you have a false start. So then it's the 1st and 15. And then you run two inside runs, which is like, wow, what are you seeing that I'm not seeing that you're thinking that this is a good idea? Like, we're going to keep pounding the rock inside. And it worked. It really worked really well. They gained all of 3 yards. So then it was 3rd and 12. And then that was the one where Levis got picked off in the end zone by Keely Ringo. And it's just, this is one where you can't waste downs. You cannot get it off schedule. You can't do that stuff. And you just looked at this, both the Kentucky game and the Missouri game. You watched it and it was just, you're just watching the opponent just like, just waste all of these opportunities. And just, it wasn't even like they played incredibly well. Kentucky just sort of didn't, you know, Kentucky didn't give up anything big. And they just made Georgia earn everything, and that was not, it was not a particularly easy day for Georgia to earn everything. But Kentucky, I mean, from the opening kickoff, they had a fair catch signal, and then the returner doesn't field the kick, so the ball starts at their own 4-yard line, and Kentucky challenges it, and they also lose their challenge, get charged their first time out, and they're starting on the 4-yard line, and it was... You know, they got bailed out at one point on a hands to the face penalty because there was they were kind of moving the ball down the field with a short passing game, and then just immediately they run an inside run and then a poorly blocked bubble screen and then get sacked on 3rd and long. But that was the one where they got bailed up by a hands to the face penalty. But it was just you're moving the ball with a short passing game, and it's like, I know what we're going to do. We're going to do an inside run again, and then we're going to run a bubble screen that's not going to be well blocked. And then we're going to put ourselves on 3rd and long, and that's where we win. And it's like, I don't think that's where you win, actually.
It is, Tom. It is definitely not where you win. I don't even know what number we are on at this point. I'm just seeing what else I can talk about here. I do think for Ohio State fans, this is the game. If you're not feeling good about the Buckeyes' chances, go to YouTube and watch this game. And you'll come away feeling, you know what? There's a chance. And now the weather conditions, Ohio State fans have wanted great weather conditions all season long. They're going to be fantastic in this one, which maybe you shouldn't actually want based on what we saw from Georgia at Kentucky. But I will say, if you go and watch this, you will feel better about your chances. And don't watch the Oregon game. Just steer clear of that one. But go ahead and watch this game because there's every reason to think that Ohio State can do the stuff that Kentucky was doing. It's just a matter of, will Georgia do those same things? Because, Tom, you're absolutely right. We've seen it for years. Great teams go on the road against lesser teams, and it's just, you know, you're playing with your food type of thing. There's no playing with your food in the playoffs. At least you don't go in expecting to do that. You may end up doing that. But everybody's going to be very, very serious, very, very locked in. And so you're going to need your best. But this just shows you that Georgia is not perfect, which is what we've been saying all season long. There are no perfect teams. So that means you have a chance to win it all.
Yeah, you do. This is definitely a year where, you know, all year long we keep saying people will say, well, you look at Ohio State and that's not a team that deserves to be in the playoffs. And this is one of those years where deserves got nothing to do with it. If you are one of the top four teams, congratulations, you're a playoff team. I think even the number two team this year probably would not be one of the top three teams in the 2019 field, but you're not playing the 2019 field. You're playing the other teams this year, and for whatever reason, just feels like it's a little bit of a down year in college football.
I think it's because of these dang super seniors. Got to get them out of here. These COVID years, wasting time, just hanging around like the 30-year-old guy that goes to the frat houses. Eventually, just move on with your life. Enough. Just grow up and get out of here.
All right, all right, all right. Next one. We got to talk about Darnell Washington. I know you did not like his blocking there on that, times. There was a play where Georgia had third and goal, and they motioned him out wide, and it's just him and a defensive back that I think Gary Daniels had said was about a foot shorter. And it's like, there's no one else in 15 yards. I'm sorry, how are you not throwing a back shoulder there or just throw the ball up in the air? And one of two things is going to happen. One, he's going to catch it. Or two, you're going to draw a pass interference penalty and get a first and goal. I mean, either of these are acceptable outcomes there. And they didn't even look at him. They threw one to Ladd McConkey, who was going east-west and was also at like the 2-yard line. And it was like, why was that the decision there? If you have an absolute mutant like Darnell Washington and he's singled up against a guy who is much smaller than him, throw him the football. Like, this is extremely not that difficult. I'm wondering if he doesn't have great hands, and you see that they see that in practice, and that's why they're not throwing it to him. I keep looking at him and going, why does he not get the ball every time in the red zone? This is you know, a different shape and size version of the Marvin Harrison thing, where like, why are you not throwing him the ball all the time? Because no one can cover him because he is unlike anyone else on the field.
And I only really recall one throw to him, and it was overthrown, and he was wide open, kind of leaked out towards the left side, and Stetson Bennett wasn't able to hit him. And I wrote down perhaps it was the wind that did that, that caused that. But And even Brock Bowers, 2 catches for 10 yards in this one. And that's 2 games in a row that we've watched where those two guys, we talk about them so much, but they've not really been part of the passing game. So it's possible to slow them down. I don't know that you necessarily go about stopping them, but Ohio State did very well against Notre Dame tight end Michael Mayer. And if they're not going to throw the ball to Darnell Washington, then you only really need to concern yourself with Brock Bowers. Because if Ohio State has a 5'7 corner that they can go ahead and put on the 6'7 Darnell Washington, apparently that's all you need to worry about. Just don't run it that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you may have issues in run support there if that's the matchup. But yeah, it is. I am fascinated by the Georgia offense, and I feel like we've watched enough now that we're sort of starting to figure out like what makes this team go. And it feels like it's the, if you can get the short, easy passes to Brock Bowers, to Kenny McIntosh out of the backfield, maybe you hit Ladd McConkey. I mean, like those are the ones that feels like that's the stuff that if they're sort of, you know, in rhythm and hitting those, and those guys can make someone miss. And then on the other side of the ball, the defense is tackling so surely that your 7-yard pass turns into a 7-yard pass, and their 7-yard pass turns into a 20-yard pass. That feels like where, you know, if you see that, that's an uh-oh for Ohio State fans. But yeah, if Bowers is not part of the offense, then that I think has to be a concern for Georgia fans. Something else that I think is maybe a little bit of a concern for Georgia fans is we saw kind of the same clock management from Kirby Smart at the end of the half here as at the end of the half against Tennessee. They're taking a lot of time. They're not using timeouts. In this one, the half probably should have been over, as they talked about ad nauseum on the broadcast, that, you know, they're managing it with no urgency whatsoever. I think there were 9 seconds left or something like that. And they threw a pass that gained 3 yards, maybe 4 yards. And he got tackled inbounds and got, you know, like driven backwards out of bounds. And, you know, the rule, I guess, is that the clock should keep running in that case. So you gained functionally nothing and you risked not getting points there. Never came within 10 yards of taking a shot in the end zone. It feels, and you know, this was very much the same situation as the Tennessee game where they were going to get the ball after the half, I believe. I think that was the case in the Tennessee game as well. I know it was the case here. So you're just trying to get some points. But just he plays that situation, that particular situation, has played it very, very conservatively twice in a row. And, you know, when you're facing an offense, I mean, we'll see how Ohio State's offense does against Georgia. But it feels like, you know, maybe he doesn't trust Bennett in those situations. Maybe he's just going to lean on his defense. Maybe that's a let's just get a few more points and then we're going to get the ball after the half. I don't really know what the thinking was. But this is now twice that we've seen basically the same clock management at the end of the half out of Kirby Smart, where against Tennessee, he cost himself a chance to take another shot or two into the end zone. And in this one, they didn't even get close to taking a shot or two in the end zone.
Yeah, and the play that you're talking about, the pass to Brock Bowers at the sideline, he gets hit and does not get any forward progress and gets knocked out of bounds. Probably should have run the clock. The reason it stopped, which led to a Georgia field goal, which gave them a three-pointer that, you know, if the game is 13-6 in the fourth quarter, like now you're talking about a much different game. And so they got a field goal out of that one, and I think that was not insignificant. You mentioned earlier, and I've got just a few things left that I want to discuss. The wonky kickoff to start the game with the kickoff return, like, kind of raises his hand to start running, and they call it a fair catch, and then they try to review it even after they've blown the whistle. I don't even know what they were going to say. Like, oh, well, okay, it wasn't a fair catch. We'll just put the ball where we blew the whistle. I mean, it was never going to go well for Kentucky on that one. Kentucky coming into this game had allowed 33 sacks, which was the seventh most in the nation. I think they gave up one to Georgia. So that's, again, we saw Georgia get, I believe, 6 sacks against Tennessee. That was the most they've had in the SEC by far this season. 1 against Kentucky, not really necessarily an issue, but also Will Levis has the ability to escape. They used him a little bit in the running game. As you said, not sure how applicable that is to Ohio State. There's one point in this game, and it was whenever the first punt was, which was in the third or fourth quarter, and Gary Danielson, I think, is like, this is the first punt for Georgia all game. And I'm like, how can that be? You only have 16 points. And you go back and look, it's like, well, they lost it on downs. There was an interception. Just the low number of possessions was jarring. But yeah, to have one punt at that point, the grounding call, Will Levis had a grounding call that shouldn't have been a grounding call. And they may have picked it up, but it ended up leading to a missed field goal for Kentucky. So there are some things here where a couple of bounces and maybe Kentucky is playing for the game, but obviously Georgia would have dictated things differently if they weren't always up by 10 or 16 or whatever. They're up 16 for most of this game. And then the last thing, the tight end screen to the Kentucky tight end that could have gone for 6 and ended up going for 20 late in the game. I was thinking, boy, that's a great play. I wrote it down, put the 3 hearts next to it. And then and then Thursday night in the Amazon, the NFL game, it was San Francisco ran it with Brock Purdy. It was the exact same play. And everybody's like, oh my God, Ohio State should run this play. I'm like, well, Georgia's seen it. So if they want to try it, go for it. But they've already seen it this year. And they stopped it with the last line of defense.
And, you know, no offense to Ohio State's tight ends and this year in particular, but on the last day of the year of the tight end, I'm not sure Ohio State should be throwing the ball to the tight end when they have the wide receivers that they have. I mean, I know you can't just do the one thing over and over again, but it feels like, unless a tight end is wide, wide, wide open, you might want to give it to the guys who are, you know, the more explosive playmakers down the field, because they had all sorts of clever stuff schemed up for the tight end against Michigan, and it didn't go great. So consider throwing to Marvin Harrison. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. My final question, Tony, there was a shot where Kenny McIntosh was getting oxygen on the sideline, and I don't typically think of Lexington, Kentucky as like a particularly high altitude city. I have not looked up the altitude of Lexington, Kentucky. Perhaps you can do that right now, but that's something that you normally see. You know, I remember as a kid, like games at Mile High Stadium. Okay, yeah, you've got the guys on the sidelines taking oxygen who are not used to playing at that kind of altitude. But there was no explanation. It was just kind of like, yeah, he's there and that's what he's doing. It's like, I can't remember the last time I saw someone getting oxygen on the sideline who was not playing in Mile High or, you know, War Memorial Stadium in Laramie, Wyoming, or, you know, Salt Lake City or something like that.
Well, I will tell you, Tom, Lexington is, they call it the nearly quarter mile high city. So it is about 900 feet above sea level. So that's
the 300 meter city. Very catchy. Yes.
Yes. Now, no, Tom. Don't bring in that metric system. This is feet. Okay.
The grass is blue because of oxygen deprivation. Not many people know that.
So, yeah, as long as you're on flat land at sea level and you're not too chilly out and the wind isn't just blowing a little bit, you got to like your chances if you're Georgia. Anything else? I think I'm through all of my notes for the most part. And yeah, I think I'm done.
Atlanta is 738 feet above sea level. So, you know, you're significantly lower. I believe that's below what mountain climbers call the death zone. So, should be fine for this game.
No, I believe, the sideline report was that Kenny McIntosh was suffering from the bends. Is that what it was? He had,
come down from the upper deck of the stadium too quickly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So had to put him in a compression chamber and get him going. And then he came back and he's running fine. So, we'll see. They'll probably have, you know, like when teams from the South travel to the North and they bring their own heaters, You probably like bring your own chamber to go ahead and decompress if you need to. So just something to worry about, something to watch, something to concern yourself with if you are a fan of sports. So that will do it for today. I want to thank you all for joining us. As always, you can find us at BuckeyeHuddle.com. Become a member. Say hello to us there on the message board. Find us at YouTube.com/BuckeyeHuddle as well. And for all the random college football fans that are watching this, you can check out Buckeye Huddle's new YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@CFB Playbook. It is a CFB playbook on YouTube. So check that out. We're going to have a ton of content there for college football fans of all kinds. So thank you for joining us today, and we'll talk to you guys later.